To quote the ancient Mandalorian code, this is the way.
You can't go on the basketball floor and not be competitive. You better like to freaking compete. You can wake this sleeping beast with a little enthusiasm, a little excitement, a little relentless energy every single day.
There's the horn of Fighting Phoenix. Pack up the University of California. Golden Bears, the Fighting Phoenix move on to round two of the NCAA tournament.
The Green Bay Phoenix men's basketball team, your Horizon League champions here in 2013-14. The Green Bay Phoenix are going to the NCAA tournament.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Fear the Phoenix podcast. It is our Horizon League halfway point episode, as Green Bay has hit the halfway point of the conference schedule. 10 games down, 10 games to go in the regular season. My name is Brian Dickman, and I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by the star of the show's all-time leader in points and assists, the irreplaceable Jim Cerro. Jim, how are you doing today, sir?
Good. I noticed that you left out my other stat that I'm the all-time leader in, which is unsolicited words spoken. But, you know, that's a more of a niche category.
Yeah. Well, that's an actual relevant category to the podcast here. But, yeah. So we're recording this Tuesday night. So we've had a few days to look back now. And it's pretty wild how bad of a sports day this past Saturday was. Obviously, you had GB get absolutely boat raced by Northern Kentucky Saturday evening. You had the Packers lose in, you know, typical Packers playoff fashion, which is consistently the most heartbreaking way possible, essentially. You know, GB women's hoops team even lost, and they never lose. So, I mean, they suffered their first conference loss of the season, but time to put all that behind us, Jim, and look forward, because got a big week ahead of us here. Phoenix opening up a three-game homestand Thursday night. They'll have three home games in a span of 8 days, I believe it is, and comes at a good time too, I think. You know, not to talk too much about the Packers, but obviously, you know, their season ending sucks, but with that comes a little bit more attention, a little bit more local media focus, a little bit more opportunity for the Phoenix to capture some hearts and minds here. So, and they've got a pretty good story to tell so far this season. So with that, let's dive into it a little bit here. Green Bay sits at 12-9 overall, 7-3 in the Horizon League, half game behind Oakland for first place in the league. They're at 7-2, half game ahead of both Youngstown State and Northern Kentucky, who both sit at 6-3. So, Jim, the team has gone 6-2 since our last episode that we recorded between Christmas and New Year's. Wins coming against Wright State twice, which is awesome. Robert Morris, Cleveland State, IAPUI, and Detroit Mercy. And then the two losses both coming on the road at Oakland and at Northern Kentucky. So I guess first things first here, Jim, how are you feeling about this team right now since I mentioned we've officially hit the halfway point? Well, at least Green Bay and IUPUI have. The others haven't officially gotten to 10 games yet. But just kind of overall, how are you feeling about this team and where they're at right now?
I mean, if you are not over the moon excited about Green Bay Phoenix basketball right now, then I don't know that you'll ever be excited about Green Bay Phoenix men's basketball. You're halfway through the conference season. You've played, I believe, more of those first 10 games on the road than you did at home, and you're sitting right on the cusp of first place in the league with the opportunity in your next game to avenge a loss to the current first place team. So really, if this is not what gets you excited, I'm not sure that Green Bay basketball or college basketball for that matter is your sport of choice as a fan. That's how I feel.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I was thinking about that, you know, even after the loss on Saturday, I didn't want that to put such a damper on this huge game that's coming up on Thursday, because it is something to get excited about. And, you know, I know the athletic department's trying to rally the troops and things like that, like, you know, pack the resh, because it is such a big game. We'll get into that a little bit later on here, but the last time we recorded, we talked a little bit about the positives and the negatives from the previous stretch of however many games it was before we recorded. So I thought we could kind of do the same thing here, talk about some of the positives and the negatives that we've seen in that eight game stretch since we've talked last. And so I don't know, Jim, you want to kick it off with negatives or positives first, or how are you feeling?
Positives, man. Let's talk about something fun. Yeah.
Yeah. So for me, my first positive that I wrote down was sweeping Wright State. And obviously, you know, they've kind of been, if not the team to beat, one of the teams to beat in the Horizon League for the past, you know, 8 years or however many years it's been. And you think about how they've kind of dominated Green Bay in that stretch of time. So, you know, the first win overall in the series since February of 2020, they had lost seven straight to Wright State. First win in Dayton since 2015, they had lost 10 straight at the Nutter Center. And the first sweep of them since 2014-2015 season. So, I you know, that's a huge feather in the cap for this program to do that, you know, for Sonny and his staff to do that in year one is a huge positive, I think.
Yeah, I mean, totally.
How about you?
Totally agree with that. You know, sweeping Wright State, like, they hadn't won, to your point, at the Nutter Center in 10 years. And the 10 years before that weren't particularly favorable either. it feels like that place has been a very difficult place to win. And, you know, for if you remember, like, they were close to winning a game there with Kamari McGee, and he blew out a shoe, and then Trey Calvin had a shot over him. But we did it without the loss of any sports equipment on the team too. So
yeah. I'll do one more, and then I'll let you do one of your positives here. But you know, on the flip side of knocking off one of the top dogs in the league, I guess, I also had on here taking care of business against the bottom tier teams. You know, they had double digit wins against Robert Morris, Detroit Mercy, and IUPUI, which, I mean, it doesn't seem like it would be something that's too noteworthy, but I think back to even in like the Link Darner era, where those IUPUI teams always gave Green Bay, you know, so much trouble. So just the fact that they were able to somewhat comfortably put these teams away, you know, win by double digits. Sonny had a comment after one of the games that, you know, essentially they're not going to put these games away in the first half or even the first 30 minutes of games just because of the style that they play, you know, at the tempo and things like that. And that was kind of the case with these games, but eventually they were able to pull away, and that's what good teams are supposed to do. So, you know, it's good that Green Bay was able to do that, especially, you know, you think about the last 3 years, how many times they were on the receiving end of some of these kind of games. So I had that down as one of my positives, but let's hear a couple of your positives.
Yeah, I had three, one very similar to you and two a little different. So my first one, it's going to be kind of like, hard to say it's a positive in that you're already expecting it, I guess, but we already knew Noah Rounds was a stud. But then in those eight games, he's had games with 39, 27, 32, and 30, if I remember correctly. So, I mean, that's full-blown, like, unstoppable player in the Horizon League, and just showing everybody that he is, you know, as they like to say, he is that guy. So, like, not only is he good, he has emerged as that guy. I mean, the number of 30-point games he's had in that stretch has been amazing. Another positive, along with sweeping Wright State, they're 3-2 overall on the road. They had five you know, in that 8-game stretch, they obviously lost to Fort Wayne in the conference play to begin, but in the 8-game or in the 10-game stretch, eight games since we recorded last, they're 3-2 on the road. You know, that's what people always talk about. You gotta take care of business at home, but you also have to win some road games too. You can't just, you know, lose every one of them. And for them to be 3-2 in that time period speaks a lot for where this team is coming. And then Coach Wicks has a term. He doesn't use it in regard to how I'm going to use it, but one of his terms is protect the vibe. One of the coolest things that's happened in the last 8 games is when they've been at home, that Wright State game, the Morris game, the Cleveland State game, we have a vibe in the Rush Center now, and the team has taken it upon itself to protect that vibe coming down the stretch. They have delivered. You know, when the fans have gotten into it, they have not disappointed. And I just think that, you know, that is the kind of thing when you walk out of a game, people are going to be like, am I entertained? Did I have a good time? Did they win? And they're delivering on those things. And hopefully they get good crowds Thursday and Saturday of this weekend and kind of keep protecting that vibe and building on that. Because this is a program that, you know, not that long ago was averaging 3,000 people a game. I mean, that was like the floor. And the floor had dropped out in the last, 5 years. I want to see them get back to having a crowd of paid adults of over 3,000 people sometime soon, and doing what they're doing and protecting that home court vibe is going to help. So those are the positives I had, Brian.
Yeah, I had another one here listed as a positive, and it's pretty much right along those same lines. Huge positive for me is awesome home environments. So I've only been to the Milwaukee and the Wright State games so far, but the atmosphere at those games, and you know, you think about the Wright State game was at, I think it was like noon on a Friday or something during the holidays, but I don't think I've experienced an atmosphere like that in the Resh in a long, long time. Like even when we were drawing 4,000, 3,500 or something like that, you know, there's 2,000 or 2,500 fans or whatever, and everyone's into it, getting on their feet, even watching you mentioned the Robert Morris and Cleveland State games, watching those on TV, that atmosphere was coming through the TV, which is hard to do with, you know, an ESPN Plus broadcast, but yeah, it's been special so far and hopefully something that we were able to keep building on. You know, Sonny had in his post-game press conference against Cleveland State, he was kind of talking about the magic at the Resh.
How do you create magic? You know, it's one of those things where you watch enough basketball and there's some things you can explain and some things you can't. And the picturesque moment for me is walking off the Resh and see one of the guys who grinds here every single day. He's jacked up and he looks at me and he goes, "What the hell's happening?" You know, and it's like one of those things where I just looked at him, I said, "We're making magic, creating belief." And how do you do it is that you get a locker room full of guys who only believe in everything except their ability, right? Like, they don't believe in, like, "I'm just talented. I'm so talented, I'm supposed to be here." They believe in each other. They believe in the work. They believe in the art of having an edge, because 11 of the 13 guys on this roster, 11 of the 13 guys on this roster, their only scholarship offer, or one scholarship offer, was to Green Bay. Whether out of high school, or whether that's like they went to junior college first, or they were Division II player that ended up coming to Green Bay, 11 of the 13 only had one. Noah Reynolds had one offer to Wyoming. All these guys were the guys that were under-recruited, under-evaluated, and have overachieved. And you create magic with people that have a higher level of belief in everything else except their own ability, because they know it takes a special team, a special group of guys to create magic. And what you saw out there was more magic at the Resh. And you saw that from the fans who started believing. And I love when I can do this, and Noah Reynolds or somebody can do this, and the fans can respond to that. They can be prompted because they want it just as bad as we do. I love that, because that's belief. And that's where the magic is. The magic is in the people. The power is in the person. That's the belief that we're creating.
So yeah, I mean, you heard Sonny there. It has honestly been kind of magical being at the Resh, and I can't stress it enough. We need everyone to be able to get to the Resh on Thursday for the Oakland game and make that a special environment again. So one other positive that I had here, Jim, and it kind of leads into a negative, unfortunately, is David Douglas emerging as the number two scoring option. So in those two games right before he got hurt, he was averaging, you know, over 20 points a game, shooting over 55% from behind the arc. I think he was 5 for 10 against Oakland and 6 for 10 against IUPUI from behind the arc. And then he's ended up missing the last three games here due to a back injury he suffered at practice. So that kind of leads into a big negative, is that he's kind of been, you know, hopefully not a momentum killer or anything like that, because he was really coming on strong. But that's one of my negatives, and I think you've kind of got the same idea there as well.
Yeah, I mean, totally. The 15 and the 26 in the back-to-back games. And, you know, in the 26, like, at IUPUI, he got a lot of, you know, creation from Noah Reynolds. But he also, he was at the rim. He scored in a variety of ways. He really put on an offensive display in that particular game, like giving you a glimpse of how he is going to be an impactful player this year and for the years to come. So the good news is that if I saw correctly, he at the Wright State and Northern Kentucky games, he was in uniform, so he must, you know, be somewhat near game time decision stage. Because at the Cleveland State game, I mean, he was walking around with like crutches and stuff. It looked like he was done for his career the way he was moving around at the Cleveland State game. I'm like, he is too young to have an injury like that happen. So hopefully he's going to be back, and he would be very impactful if he's back for the Oakland game. Just having another shooter on the floor would do wonders for Green Bay's offense.
Yeah, especially against that zone, for sure. Again, we'll touch on that here in a little bit. Do you have any other negatives that you want to touch on here?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I try to be balanced in the way I look at the program. In the last 8 games since we recorded, I had 2 other negatives. And, you know, one was just the Northern Kentucky game overall, but they struggled to, you know, make shots. I didn't rewatch the entire game, but they definitely got a lot of threes. But as I alluded to in my give and go, they didn't make very many of them. Now, some of that is they're sped up. Some of it is, you know, just you have those nights. But that was just frustrating that they could not make Northern Kentucky pay when they got their opportunities. And then the other thing that's frustrating, it's going to lead back to the Oakland preview, but the Trey Townsend, I think, had 28 and 11 when we played at Oakland. And in addition to that, you know, Elijah Jones, Will Eames, Marcus Hall, all were in foul trouble trying to guard him. So, you know, coming into Thursday's game, what's going to be different? What, hopefully other than having a better whistle, what else can Green Bay do to help contain him? Because he put them on their back. Like, Green Bay had the lead in that game with a minute 52 left. I think they had a 1-point lead with under 2 minutes left in the game, and then lost by 6. And a lot of that was at the free throw line. So that was not like a negative, like, you know, oh my God, the sky is falling. Just like, hey, there's a dude, and that dude's a key factor in where Green Bay wants to get to. He's a key hurdle in the way right now. So,
yeah, I think having Jim Cerro within yelling distance of the officials will be helpful in getting a more balanced whistle on Thursday. But you know, for my negative, you know, I kind of figured that. Yeah, we would just talk about how they got crushed on Saturday by Northern Kentucky. You know, analytically, at least, it was their second worst performance of the year behind only the season opener at Iowa State, which we were at, which, you know, just kind of a head scratcher, because they really haven't been blown out by a mid-major opponent, at least this year. I know the SIU and the Western Illinois games weren't exactly close, but this one was just, you know, just tough to watch. I mean,
in the Western game and the SIU game, they made little runs here and there. You know, they were double digit trailing, but didn't lose by double digits, if I remember correctly. Right. But yeah, in this game, it got bad and didn't get better.
Yeah, I mean, what do you attribute that to? Is it just, you know, how unique that NKU zone is? Is it tired legs? Because it is honestly probably the toughest road trip in the league. But I mean, it's just kind of one of those games, essentially. They weren't making shots. let's not talk about it ever again kind of thing? Or like, what do you really attribute that to?
I think a lot of it has to just come down to, if you haven't seen it, you know, you can watch it on film, but until you see it in real life, it's hard to execute, you know, what it takes to defeat something like that. I would be hopeful that in the next game, once they've had an opportunity to, you know, prep and rep and rewatch, I think coach uses, you know, the term teach tape, like to watch the, you know, what went good, bad, or otherwise, that we will see a much more effective game plan against that zone. Because everybody refers to it as like, it's unlike anything else you've ever seen. Well, if it's unlike anything else anybody has ever doing, then you got to play against it a couple times to figure out what the, you know, to steal another one from the recent video clips, what the hell's happening? You know, you gotta, well, what the hell's happening? You know, the negative too, you got to see it, right? So that's all I attribute it to. It's, you know, and I also think that, and you saw it a little bit too, like the players were a little frustrated with some of the calls. I mean, Noah picked up a technical foul. It was hard because, like, not only are they not making shots, the physicality that Northern Kentucky was able to use versus what Green Bay was able to use seemed a little imbalanced.
Yeah, maybe a little reality check, I guess, after cruising to a relatively easy win at Wright State a couple days before that. But, you know, hey, they're not all going to be that easy. So, but yeah, with that, that's our positives and negatives. So, Jim, let's move along here to everyone's favorite game, one that I've shamelessly stolen from other podcasts and from the classic movie Office Space with Tom Spankowski's famous invention, the jump to conclusions mat.
You see, it would be this mat that you would put on the floor and would have different conclusions written on it that you could jump to.
That is the worst idea I've ever heard in my life, Tom.
Yes. Yes, it's horrible, this idea.
Yes, we've reached the halfway point of the Horizon League schedule, so let's jump to some conclusions here. The first conclusion, and we'll play it like this. Essentially, I'll ask you a question, you know, and then you'll say, is that a conclusion that you're willing to jump to? So first one out of the gate here, is Green Bay a contender for the Horizon League regular season title? Is that a conclusion you're willing to jump to?
Ryan, I'm jumping off of 1 foot. I'm jumping off of 2 feet, but I'm jumping. This is definitely a conclusion I'm willing to jump. My logic behind this, you know, they are 7-3. I mean, we're at the halfway point. You don't fluke your way to 7-3. Another factor I like for them, they are 4-0 at home in Horizon League play, but they have 6 more to go at home. They have only 4 more on the road. And they're 3-3 on the road. So they're looking good. And in those home wins, they've won by 12, 11, 17, and 8. So, you know, you got a bunch of games at home. You're winning at home by a fair amount of points. And you haven't done terribly on the road. And you're already in position. It's not like you're trying to come from 2 or 3 games back. They're coming from a half game back with 10 to go here. Yeah, I'm willing to jump there. What about you, Brian?
Absolutely. I think we've got the same idea here. Essentially, you know, they're only a half game out of first place at the halfway point. So, yeah, they are a contender right now. So, especially, you know, if you win the game on Thursday, you're in first place all by yourself. So, but I get the feeling that there's a lot of people around the league, you know, maybe even within our own fan base, just kind of feels like people are waiting for that drop off in performance and results, kind of like we've seen from Purdue Fort Wayne. And, I don't know. I don't think we're going to see it. I think this past Saturday was just kind of a little, you know, blip on the radar. But with that being said, you know, looking at some of the analytics sites like Bart Torvik's site, he predicts that Green Bay will finish 12-8, which would be tied for fourth place. So, you know, finishing top four wouldn't be the worst thing. But I mean, where we're at right now, let's go for it. let's win this whole thing. So
okay. One thing about you talk about fans and whether they're in our fan base or not, like fans, we are afraid to be hurt. Like you put your heart and soul in something and then Jordan Love throws a crossbody 25 yard interception with the season on the line. You're afraid to get hurt.
Yeah.
It sucks. Like it sucks when your team doesn't do well. Green Bay Phoenix fans, you have been, their heart has been stepped on multiple times. Like, we're almost to the point where you're immune to the 22-point loss to Northern Kentucky because you've seen that story before for the last couple of years.
Yeah.
But this is the moment where fans get on board and put themselves out there and steer that, face that fear of getting hurt right in the, and just say, we're going for it. This is our year. It's happening. It's happening. Let's go.
Yes. I love it. Jumping in with 2 feet. Perfect. So the next question that kind of leads to is Oakland is the favorite to win the Horizon League regular season title. Is that a conclusion you're willing to jump to?
Well, anybody who's seen me play basketball knows I have no vertical at all at my age. So I'm going to stick with this is a conclusion that looks much like my basketball game in that no, I'm not jumping anywhere. I am nailed to the ground, both feet with anchors and, on my ankles, not going there. Anybody who's ever played the fine game of craps at the casino, you'll see people go on a heater and you know that eventually every heater somebody craps out. And so their 7-game winning streak, they are 4-1 at home, but those wins are by 5, 6, 5, and 3. They are winning, but they're going to have more games on the road than they have, they're going to have more games on the road than they have at home. And I think that they're going to run into everybody's best shot. Like, talk about people around the league saying, oh, Green Bay may not be for real. People do believe Oakland's for real. So I think they're going to get everybody's best shot every night. And no, I'm not willing to jump to the conclusion that they are the favorite. What about you?
Well said. Yeah, one of my favorite stats is the luck metric on KenPom.com. Like somehow, trying to quantify luck, and it was pretty accurate with UWM's team last year. I think they ended up finishing top 10 or top 20 in the, as one of the luckiest teams in the country. Oakland is sitting at number 41 right now in the luck metric. So I don't know if they've been like super lucky, but I'll say we've seen this movie before. Last year they started 7-3 in the league. They finished 11-9. The year before that they were actually 9-1 and they finished 12-7. So I think we referenced the Oakland slide last time we got together on the podcast. I don't know if I'm willing to say I'm expecting it this year, but I'm not willing to make that jump to a conclusion that they're the favorite at this point, even though Torvik site at least has them as a 58% chance to at least win a share of the title, which is the league favorite. So, but for me, even though they're the hottest team in the league right now, I don't know if I would go out on that limb yet to say that they're the favorite. So the next conclusion that we can jump to here, and I think I know how you're going to go with this one, but the combination of Noah Reynolds and Sundance Wicks are the favorites for player of the year and the coach of the year in the Horizon League. You willing to jump to that conclusion?
As a combination, no, I'm not. I think that Noah Reynolds is the best player in the league. I also think that the team has to secure a top 2 or 3 spot to get that honor. This isn't Antoine Davis scoring, going for Pete Maravich's record and getting, a lot more acclaim, even though the team is not successful. I do think that player of the year is usually reserved for a player who's on one of the top teams. So while I do think the team, is there, I really think that the fan, or if not the fans, the people that vote on this are going to need to see the team probably win the conference. Conversely, I think that Coach Wicks is the favorite to win the Coach of the Year based on the expectation was for this to be the 11th place team. The fact that they're, virtually, I mean, they're not that far away from securing 10th place, worst case scenario. I can't really say that because Detroit hasn't won a game. Just throwing a little Detroit shade. But my point is, they were picked so low that he can finish third or fourth in the league. We'll look at that. That guy's coach of the year. The precedent's already been set there with Coach Dennis Gates. I think won a coach of the year and didn't win the league. So that's kind of how I feel about
seventh,
that.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And so I kind of look at this as a very similar situation, that if you were unpackaging this and saying, is Noah Reynolds, going to be the favorite to win player of the year? No, because the team has to win the conference probably for him to do that. But Coach Wicks can win coach of the year without the team winning the conference is kind of how I see it. Where do you fall on that?
Yeah, I think Wicks is a no brainer. Honestly, the better question probably is, if they lose out, would he still be the coach of the year? I think he's got it locked up that much. But, I guess the only other options I could potentially see would be Jared Calhoun, since they were picked fifth, and Greg Campy at Oakland, they were picked sixth. But like you said, Green Bay has started from the bottom, now we're here kind of thing. And, Jim, pop quiz time. I had to throw at least one of them in here.
But, oh, boy.
So since 2010, which was as far back as my lazy ass was willing to look, what is the highest regular season finish for a team that was picked to finish last in the Horizon League preseason poll? Just give me a number.
Four. Fourth.
That's close. Is that actually third? Wright State finished third back in 2012-2013, which I had to double check that. Like, Wright State was actually picked to finish last, but they ended up finishing 10-6 that year and third place. And it's interesting, the only time in that span that the team that was picked to finish last finished in the top half of the league was Wright State. So what Green Bay is doing right now is kind of unprecedented when you look at it that way. And then as far as Reynolds goes, I was kind of like trying to figure out, Trey Calvin and Tanner Holden, and they're probably going to split some votes, so maybe cancel each other out. Marquez Warrick is, great scorer. He's had to shoulder more of the load now with Sam Vincent out for the season, but I just don't think he's quite at the level of a complete of a player as Reynolds or even like a Trey Calvin. Townsend from Oakland.
Trey Townsend, I mean, if Oakland somehow doesn't slide, he's going to get significant traction for player of the year. I mean, it just feels like the award to me is going to go to the best player on the first place team, unless something like crazy happens. But if Noah keeps putting up, 30-point games left and right and takes that scoring average to a point where it's, so far past everyone else, then it gives him a lot more wiggle room to win player of the year.
Yeah.
And the coolest thing about Noah Reynolds, he would be the first guy to tell you he doesn't give a shit about winning player of the year and he just wants the team to win. That's the magic the whole team is built on. So it's kind of a fun thing for us guys to talk about. And then, at the end of the day, he just wants to play in the NCAA tournament. Like, that's what he wants.
Yeah.
If he's player of the year or not, he wants to play in the NCAA tournament.
I would take that. But so two more conclusions to jump to here, and then we'll move along kind of along the same lines. David Douglas Jr. is the favorite for freshman of the year. Is that a conclusion that you're willing to jump to?
If he comes back from this injury, for sure. I mean, he's multi-time freshman of the week. The cool part for Green Bay and the success that they're having, though, is that they got another freshman who's kind of looking around at that and saying, hey, hold my beer here for a second, even though he's not old enough to legally hold a beer. That's neither here nor there. But you look at, Marcus Hall, he was freshman of the week this week. And the way he does it is a little less flashy than the way David Douglas had done it. Like, you just kind of look up and you're like, oh, 10-8, 9-7, whatever. But, it's amazing that Green Bay, in my mind, has the freshman of the year. It's just more a matter of which of the two guys is probably going to get it based on the health and, of David Douglas. Like, you know, it's more of a race with two guys, I guess, you know, obviously. But even if he doesn't get it, then you're going to have Marcus Hall. So I'd say David Douglas will get it if he's healthy. Yes, I'm jumping there.
Yeah. I was looking at this and I'm like, you know, it might be hard to find five guys to make up an all freshman team this year, but you know, David Douglas, Marcus Hall, I think Corey Hadnott from Purdue Fort Wayne, those guys are shoo-ins.
Gabe Dines, is he a freshman from Youngstown State?
Yep. Yeah, Drake. I got Drake Carter from Wright State. Gabe Dines from Youngstown. Yeah, those guys are probably, you know, the other guys that round out the first team or the all freshman team. But yeah, you kind of touched on it, but Marcus Hall, kind of an unsung hero. He just reliably does all the little things, and it kind of goes unnoticed if you're only checking box scores, which is probably what a lot of the voters do that decide these, you know, kind of awards. They just check the stats. So for that reason, I think, you know, Hadnott is probably the leader in the clubhouse. I think he's got a few more Freshman of the Week honors, but, you know, David Douglas could definitely, you know, win that award. Like you say, if he comes back healthy and he keeps going on the tear that he was before the injury. But pretty cool to know that Green Bay is, you know, definitely going to have at least two guys on that all freshman team. So the last one here, the last conclusion we're willing to jump to, or are you willing to jump to this conclusion? The current Horizon League top four are the favorites to make it to Indy for the semifinals of the conference tournament. Top four right now: Oakland, Green Bay, Youngstown State, and Northern Kentucky. Are those the four favorites to make it to Indy in your mind? Are you jumping to that conclusion?
I am not. No, I have the top three, and instead of Northern Kentucky, I have Cleveland State. Cleveland State has six more home games left. They, I think, are on a 17-game home court winning streak, maybe second longest in the country, I might have read recently. Does that sound about right to you, Brian? Am I pulling that out of thin air? I'll go with that.
Sounds good.
I just know this. They win a lot in Cleveland, and they have more home games than road games left. And then if they do well with that, obviously, then they're going to have more home games in the Horizon League tournament. So I kind of feel like Cleveland State gets that fourth spot. I really, even though we kid about the Oakland slide, you know, they've done some things that I do appreciate since our last conversation. Obviously, I'm super bullish on Green Bay, and I picked Youngstown State to win the league in my preseason poll. So not backing down now that they're starting to play good. So what about you? Are Oakland, Green Bay, Youngstown, and Northern, is that who you're rolling with to Indy?
I'm going to jump to that conclusion. You know, I love NKU, even without Vincent. I kind of debated throwing Wright State in there. You know, the metrics still love them, mostly because they are so good offensively. They have a top 25 offense, you know, in offensive efficiency in the entire country, but they're 337th in defensive efficiency. So, I mean, if they could just figure something out to be, you know, average on defense, that changes things quite a bit for them instead of just being complete garbage. But I think right now, since we're talking about it today, yes, those are the four that I'm going to jump to conclusions to make it to Indy.
All right.
So that is our game of jump to conclusions. Let's wrap it up here with talking about Thursday. We got a big one coming up at the Resch Center. Oakland coming to town. A few weeks back, Oakland won the first meeting 79-73. It was a game that Green Bay trailed by 13 points in the second half, but came all the way back to take a three-point lead with 5 minutes left. Kind of went back and forth from there. You mentioned it earlier, but Green Bay had a one-point lead with a minute 52 to go, but they didn't make another field goal the rest of the way. And certainly were plenty of missed opportunities in that one, Jim. I mean, I rewatched it the other day, and, you know, Green Bay was up one, and Rocket Watts missed a three, and Green Bay had an easy chance to grab a rebound and just couldn't get two hands on it. Instead, Oakland gets the offensive board, gets fouled, goes to the line, makes two free throws. Green Bay followed that up with an empty possession, and then Chris Conway makes this ridiculous circus shot where he's like not even looking at the basket, and somehow it goes in to put them up three with 30 seconds left. Then Green Bay comes down, turns it over. They don't even get a shot off. And, you know, that was pretty much all she wrote, except for the dunk there at the end of the game, Jim. Just kind of curious, is that something that, like, I don't know, what did you think about that? Because I saw someone on the message board said it was Bush League, and there are some people on Twitter that didn't like it either. But what were your thoughts on Rocket Watts going in for the dunk there instead of dribbling it out with the game in hand there under 3 seconds left or whatever it was?
10.4 seconds left. The inbound to Reynolds. He'll fire the three off the heel. No. Isaiah Jones to rebound. Outlet to Rocket Watts. Rocket will jam it down with the right hand, and the cakes are on the griddle here in the arena.
It's a four-point game when he goes in and does that. Like, yes, the game is over. It's not necessary, but it was much more egregious in a year ago when they were
last year.
up 20 versus up four. Then honestly, if that's, you know, that can be the pinnacle of his athletic career as far as I'm concerned, because, you know, it ain't going to be going to the NCAA tournament this year in my mind. Damn straight, right, Brian?
Nice.
No, but I'll kidding. I love it. I'm just kidding. You know, whatever. That really didn't bother me. What bothered me in that game, the ref show that allowed Trey Townsend to just do whatever he wanted to do. And in particular, Greg Campy, like, talking to the officials at halftime of the game and complaining about not getting any calls on Townsend, and then complaining afterwards in the post-game press conference that they didn't get enough calls. And that was after he went and talked to all the referees at halftime of the game. Like, totally ridiculous. That was more annoying to me because Trey Townsend doesn't need the help. Like, he didn't need the refs to put him on the line because somebody, you know, looked at him sideways. Like, you know, so that was more annoying than the dunk. But that leads me to, like, this game, the defense has to be there. Can't get in foul trouble again. I mean, that was really a major factor. You think about that game at Oakland, Williams had a mega game. He was really good at both games in both Detroit Mercy and Oakland. He had statistically headline, did really well in those games. But, you know, Elijah Jones is a guy that Green Bay usually relies on to be there for them, and he was in foul trouble that game. So I just got to have defense without falling. The other thing that really annoyed me in that game, a lot of Oakland fans are not big fans of Blake Lampman because he hasn't historically been a fantastic shooter. He's labeled as a really good shooter, and his shot looks really good. It just, the success rate of said shot is not that high, and yet somehow it feels like that guy gets loose against the Phoenix a fair amount. I think he had like 18 or 19 points in the last game. Yep. He had a lot of them in the first half, but that, you cannot let that guy beat you. Just it, like, cannot let that guy beat you. You know, and then the other thing that has really helped in my mind turn Oakland's season around, they stopped playing Lampman and Golkey together. You know, when you had two guards out there that can't create anything off the dribble, they weren't going it. Their offense didn't look that good. By only playing one or the other now, and then bringing in guys like Tone Hunter and DQ Cole and some of the other guys that they have, like, their offense has become a lot more dynamic. So, you know, it's going to be a tough game on Thursday, and this is where, you know, the fans can make all the difference. You know, this is why Green Bay is pumping this game, getting people out there, because you got to have an equalizer when, you know, when they've got a guy like Townsend down low. We need to have an equalizer to take the rest of the guys out of the game. So that's kind of what I'm seeing for the Oakland game. What are you thinking, Brian?
Yeah, you know, when I went back and watched it, you kind of mentioned the fouls, and there was a huge free throw disparity. Green Bay was 8 for 11. Oakland was 22 for 29. And I get part of that as a symptom of not really being able to get inside and shooting a lot of threes. But when I think about that game, Green Bay shot about as well as they could from behind the arc. So that kind of makes me a little bit nervous considering how they just played against Northern Kentucky, you know, like live by the three, die by the three kind of thing. So, you know, I'm wondering if they're going to make a little bit more of an effort to kind of get to the rim, or if they're still going to be, they did have really good ball movement, finding the open shooters and things like that. But, you know, I don't want to have to like totally rely on the three ball again this time around.
That's true. But one thing that is a positive, if I remember correctly, Riverfront Pizza Zone, Foster Wonders did not have a great shooting game. And there, I mean, he is statistically the best 3-point shooter that the Phoenix have. So on one hand, I totally agree with what you're saying. Like, hey, everybody else really stepped up. But the guy that is normally the guy, and he had several looks. Just, I don't think he made very many. I don't know if you have the box score in front of you, but if he was, you know, 1 for 5, I wouldn't be surprised in that particular game or something of that nature. And that was coming off the heels of where I thought he made a bunch of points. And I know for sure he made a bunch against Detroit Mercy. And then 2 days later, he was like a non-factor. So that's kind of a, you know, maybe an ace up the sleeve for the Phoenix from the shooting perspective, is that the best shooter in a 6-point game didn't have his best game.
Yeah, he was only 1 for 3. So he only had 3 attempts. Interesting. But yeah, I know Sonny has talked about how he wants him to shoot like 9 or 10 threes per game. So yeah, definitely to find him some more. You talked about defensively playing on Trey Townsend. And so before that Oakland game, Sonny had actually mentioned to Brian Kuklinski on the pregame radio show that, you know, Trey Townsend is going to get his. He did. He went off for 28 and he had 10 for 15, I think he was, on his 2-point attempt. So really efficient, doing damage around the rim. But knowing that Townsend's going to get his, they need to limit the other guys. And like you mentioned, Lampman went off for 19. I think he was 5 for 11 on threes, and nobody else on their team made a 3-pointer. So, you know, this time around, do you think that's the strategy again? Or do you try and maybe throw a little bit more at Townsend to try and limit him? Or like, how do you think they're going to attack this defensively on Thursday?
I mean, Townsend was, you said it yourself, he was 10 of 15, but he had 28 points. He had, and he didn't make that many free throws either. I don't think he shot particularly well from the free throw line. I mean, he had double digit attempts for sure to make the.
Yeah, he was 8 for 13. Yep.
Yeah. So in my mind, okay, he gets 28, but you knock Lampman down from 19 to 8 or 9, you know, you could play the same game and just take 2 threes away from Lampman, and it's a tie game. You take 3 of those threes away from Lampman, and it's a Green Bay victory. You get Foster Wonders knocking down a shot or two, get his volume where it should be. You know, I just think you just have to execute better. And like, honestly, I think the home crowd influencing the officiating is a thing. Like, it's not a thing in an empty gym, but it is in a raucous building. You know, you get on them, get it going, get them, you know, feeling the intensity of the game, and get them understanding, like, hey, you can't, like, Trey Townsend did not get fouled every time he shot free throws down the stretch of that game. There was a lot of ridiculous calls, lot of ridiculous calls. That cannot happen in a rowdy rush center. It won't. I guarantee it won't happen. He'll get some. I mean, he's getting some fouls. I mean, he's playing down the post. You're going to get fouled. He's got fouled every freaking time he touched the ball. There wasn't a single time he didn't call a foul. And it was the same official calling the fouls over and over again.
Yeah. So, prediction time. Basically, a toss-up, you know, anywhere you look. Torvik has this Oakland as a 1-point favorite, with Green Bay having a 45% chance to win it. Haslametrics, which is a fun website, has Green Bay as a slight favorite, and I mean that really, like, slight favorite, 68.55 to 68.38, according to his site. I love that it gets down to the hundredths of a point, but I'm guessing Vegas will have Green Bay as a slight underdog, just based on what we've seen all year. But curious, Jim, for your prediction here, what are you thinking for Thursday night?
I like Green Bay in a low-scoring affair. I mean, Green Bay controlled the first half pace very well on the road, And that's hard to control, especially the arena. You got to give it up for it. They have a good crowd. It's a small building, so a small crowd can make a lot of noise. Every seat is close to the court. Like, so it's a tough place to play, no doubt about it. Again, this is about the fans, right? Like, Green Bay's calling card is on the defensive end. That is their, you know, and then sharing the ball offensively, of course. But on defense, the Phoenix played the game at their pace for as long as they could, but in a very difficult environment. I think that Green Bay's fan base can ratchet up the environment for Green Bay to, you know, play to their strength. Like, you know, you think about the Robert Morris, the Cleveland State game, the Wright State game, they got stops, man. They got a lot of stops down the stretch of those games, and the crowd was in it. I feel like that could be a differentiator to get Green Bay that, you know, you talk about Haslam metrics in the, you know, 68-68 range or whatever the score, you know, was. I like that number.
I'm thinking that too. I'm thinking 70-67 Foster Wonders at the buzzer, the Iron Mountain Assassin goes to Riverside Pizza afterwards.
Pizza. Yep. Yeah.
Riverside Pizza after to get a number three. But yeah, surprisingly, both of us picking Green Bay for Thursday night. But either way, make sure you get out to the Resh on Thursday night. It's going to be a lot of fun. 6 o'clock tip off.
Look, at some point, you know, you're not going to get the card you want. And it's going to happen, and you're going to lose a game, and that happens. But at the end of the day, that doesn't mean that we just stop doing what we're doing all of a sudden. So what's special about it is, yeah, these guys who believe in each other are doing it when nobody else did. That's why I tell everybody in the community, like, when we got here, sharing the sacrifice with us, you can share in the success. But there's still room for everybody. Come on board, man. We'll take all comers right now. We're not being picky right now. We want everybody to ride with us. But and when we create that competitive home court advantage, I'll tell you what, teams at the top of the league right now, you look at their home records. Look at their home records. Winning on the road is hard, no matter where you go. And so right now, I think we're 6-1 or 7-1 at home right now. And then you look at Youngstown State, it's like 10-1 at home. The teams that are top of the league are winning at home. And you have a competitive home court advantage, and that goes back to the Phoenix Rising book and the Dick Bennett Green Bay way, is you better have a competitive home court advantage like the Brown County Arena. The Resh better be that for us.
Before we get out of here, Jim, there are two other home games coming up after the Oakland game on Thursday. So Detroit Mercy comes to town on Saturday. You know, they've been playing a little bit better ball as of late. They gave NKU a good game back on the 13th. I think they only lost that one by 5. And then they lost a double overtime game at Robert Morris a few days later in another tight one. They did get absolutely boat raced by Youngstown State in their last game. I think it was a 40-point loss. But you know, Jaden Stone's back putting up numbers and you know, things like that. But this is really a game that Green Bay at home should be taken care of.
Yeah, I mean, obviously they're going to be hungry for a win. And even if they get a win between now and then, they're playing Milwaukee on Thursday. Even if they get that win, they're going to want more. I mean, they're having a tough season. And a big factor for them, like, I thought Donovan Totley was a ball hog previously, negative for a winning for them. And now he's not really playing as much anymore. And Jaden Stone is a big-time player. Jaden Stone is very additive to winning. Just doesn't have enough other parts around him to win consistently, it appears. But you do not want to play with fire with Detroit Mercy. So I would think Green Bay wins that game, but it is not looking at that and going, well, they're going to be 0-21 or 1-20 or whatever the record's going to be, and thinking that, you know, this is a win. Like, we know, for Green Bay Phoenix fans and some of the players and all the administrators, we know firsthand what that looks like and what that feels like. And you are just dying for victory. And so do not take it lightly, would be how I feel about that.
And, yep. And then the next one up after that is IUPUI with a 11 a.m. tip-off on Thursday, February 1st. IUPUI is coming to town. Kind of similar to Detroit, they had their best game of the year back on the 17th. They actually went into Fort Wayne and knocked off the Mastodons, a place where Green Bay lost earlier this year. But then they followed that up with an absolute ass-kicking at Robert Morris, home to Robert Morris. They lost that one by 17, I think it was, something like that. So, again, another game that Green Bay really should be winning, but like you mentioned, can't be taking these for granted, especially if we're, you know, putting them in the contender category. You got to be taking care of these games at home.
Brian, it's an election year. I am going to vote for whoever makes it a federal law that 11 a.m. weekday games against IUPUI, whether at home or away, is illegal. This is like, first of all, it's a royal pain in the ass for me to get to the, you know, 11 a.m. game. I appreciate the kids and the loud atmosphere, but now we got a team like that's going to bring its own atmosphere. We don't need to pump it full of kids. And IUPUI, like, they used to do a kids' day. They did a businessman's lunch day or something. I mean, there was like 50 people at that game. The Horizon League needs to put a fucking stop to this stuff. Like, don't hide your product. Stop hiding your product. I get that IUPUI doesn't have much of a product overall, but like, I'm sure if Green Bay does what they did last year, they got 4,000 kids there, I can at least respect it because it's a full house and it gives a good atmosphere, I suppose. But as a fan who's emotionally and financially invested in this, like, it is a royal pain in the butt for me. So it's that is a side factor of on the game. As for the game itself, another team you just can't take lightly. This is a team that, yes, Green Bay did beat by double digits on the road, have double digit lead, but you know, the minute you think that you are somebody, you aren't. So like, and that's one of the beautiful parts about Green Bay and Coach Wicks is that he does an amazing job of making them remember that today they're just 0-0 today. You know, like, and how do you get to 1-0 today?
Yeah, well said. So yeah, like we've been saying, we need y'all to come out, starting Thursday night, but you know, two more games after that as well. Get to the Resh, make that, you know, a good home court advantage. We definitely need it. You know, bring some friends too. It's been an awesome environment. I'm looking forward to Thursday being there with some buddies, hitting up a happy hour beforehand, and then heading over to the 6 p.m. tip off. Should be a really good time. So.
We have failed the listeners of the Fear the Phoenix podcast, though, because we did not put into motion having somebody do the promo code PTP, and then that gets you some sort of discounted ticket. Like, we should have really made that happen. So for those people who do listen to the podcast, I apologize that I didn't think of that earlier. But, you know, we'll have to see if we can make that happen for like the Youngstown State game at the end. You know, user code PTP gets you a discounted ticket.
Yeah, perfect. I love it. Yeah, we'll have to make that happen. So anything else, Jim, before we get out of here? It's always good to talk hoops, and it's going to be an exciting time of year here coming up, you know, the next month and a half, 2 months or so.
Couple of housekeeping notes. You know, you have right now, you still have membership opportunities with the NIL Collective. That is going to be imperative to sustain the success of the program. If you haven't found out any information about the NIL Collective, please at least, you know, reach out to me on social media. I'll help you. Number two, they have the Flash for Cash raffle. When you walk into the building, they are selling raffle tickets, $50 to enter. Grand prize is $5,000. I believe they're trying to sell 1,000 total tickets. So, you know, 1 in 1,000 chance to win $5,000. I've done a lot of dumber things with money. I'm sure you have too. I would recommend anybody that wants to support the program. It is a low cost, fun way to get involved. You're not having to commit hundreds or even thousands of dollars. I'm talking about a $50 raffle ticket. Steak Fry, that's going to be coming up. That's the backbone of all fundraising for the program. But you know, at the end of the day, the only thing I can ask anybody that listens to this podcast and anybody that cares about Phoenix basketball, it is time to mount up. We have to be at the games. We have to be loud. These are the seasons. These are the moments. This is why you do it. This is why you do it as a fan. So when you have a good team and you're halfway through the regular season, conference regular season, you're sitting there a half game out of first place, you go all in on this. You don't limp in. You go all in. And yes, it might bust and it might leave you disappointed, but there's also a really good chance that it could be euphoric and you'll remember the season for as long as you're a Phoenix fan. And that is why you go all in right now.
Yeah, especially with what we've endured the last 3 or 4 years. Come on board. This is a great time to be a Phoenix fan. This is what we've been waiting for, what we've been wanting, and it's come here, quicker than anyone could have ever anticipated. So, yeah, can't wait for these games here this week. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of the Fear the Phoenix podcast. Thank you all for listening. Really appreciate it. Give us some feedback on Twitter or X or whatever you want to call it. You can follow Jim at Jim Cerro. Follow me at Brian Dickman. Make sure you're following at Fear the Phoenix. Check out fearthephoenix.com as well. I've got some stuff posted there. But that'll do it for this episode. We'll talk to you again soon and hopefully see you all at the Resch on Thursday. Go Phoenix.